Hi, Malik Mio. Welcome to KABU.
Thank you. I appreciate being on your show, Bill.
Malik Mio is a longtime Black civil rights and revolutionary socialist activist, made his living as an aviation mechanic, co-wrote the books The Assassination of Malcolm X, also Angola, The Hidden Ministry of Angola's War, and also the National Black Independent Political Party, an important step for Blacks and other American workers. He's now a contributing editor with the Journal Against the Current, a U.S. socialist magazine, and on the editorial advisory board of Lynx, International Journal of Socialist Renewal. He's published several pieces recently in Green Left Weekly and Against the Current. So, Malik, this month, January 12th, we're again celebrating the federal holiday honoring Martin Luther King Jr., an event that ignites a centerpiece of the perennial national reckoning on the civil rights revolution, which came to evaluate the changing position of Blacks in this country. But over time, it's become clear that we can't discuss being Black in general because the fates of Blacks have enormously diverged. Some Blacks indeed have become beloved national heroes, not just cultural figures and sports players, also political actors like Barack Obama, Colin Powell, and of course Martin Luther King Jr. himself. And additionally, significant numbers have entered the professions and upper middle class, though a far less percentage than whites. With all those who gained, however, the considerable majority of Blacks have experienced a decline in their life opportunities and standards of living, even more than whites and other people of color, as all working class families from every population fragment, their lives have become more precarious. And regardless of layer life position, however well-to-do and well-regarded, all Black people are apprehensive about driving while Black, indeed shopping while Black. Nor, of course, has anti-Black discrimination disappeared. Methodologically competent studies have found serious discrimination wherever it's examined, in housing and medical care and education and law enforcement and getting jobs and wages, including affecting the Black middle classes. Still, my final word of this introduction, it seems to me that over the years of tireless struggle, Blacks have crucially gained citizenship. It is the right to complain, to challenge, to fight back, and sometimes to win. Anyway, you've been thinking about the ever more complicated position of Blacks and the racism they face in this country, thinking and writing about it for quite a while. Start us off.
Yes, I think it's important that we understand the role Martin Luther King played, not just in African-American history, but the country as a whole. This day was made a holiday, national holiday, by the federal government 36 years ago. King was assassinated in 1968, so it took some time between that and when it became a national holiday. But most of the government and a lot of officials, including Black officials, prominent, they sort of sanitized what King really did and accomplished and what he represents. If you look back on what the Civil Rights Revolution was, it was fundamentally a mass movement led by Blacks, included other people, whites, Asians, others who supported it, to bring fundamental change to the way the United States functioned for 200 years. And that's why it's correct to call it a revolution, because when the Civil Rights Act was adopted by Congress in 1965 and with the Voting Rights Act in 65, it changed the way Blacks could function in the state, that is, in the country. Jim Crow's legal segregation in the South ended for the most part. It took several years to make that real, but for the most part. And that meant Blacks, for the first time, could function as citizens. Not second-class citizens, but citizens. Now, how much that citizenship represented, you know, was going to be a fight. But King understood that you had to continue the fight, and that was his plan until he was assassinated. At a labor struggle, right, with a strike by sanitation workers where he was assassinated. So, to me, the King holiday is useful to step back and look at that, and then its impact, as you said, Bill, on all people in this country. It wasn't just African-Americans, but Latin Americans, Asians, who began to push for their rights in the 1970s, women, the women's movement, it grew up at the same period, gay rights movement. So these changes were very much linked to that civil rights movement. And, you know, you have to recognize King played a very prominent role in that. Now, even in that time period, it's important to recognize that there was a left wing of the civil rights movement, people who didn't think the system, that it's the capitalist system, could ever bring full equality, people like Malcolm X and others. And that movement, and you know, they were critiques of the official civil rights movement, but at the same time, even the left wing recognized the role King played in the mass campaign, because it was understood in the broad left of the black left, I should say, that only mass struggle could bring change, not electoral politics, not anything else. So it opened the door in the 1970s to what we call the divide in the black community between the educated and others who were able to join corporate society and also electoral politics, particularly the Democratic Party, run for office. So you had from a few hundred at most black elected officials in the 60s, mostly local officials, to now you have thousands, maybe even tens of thousands, and elected all over the country, even in the South. So that was a big change. But the problem was, as you pointed out, and is correct, that a lot of the people who joined these institutions, while speaking for the community that elected them, they didn't really fight for the working poor. That's the division that still exists. So you can have prominent blacks, including Obama becoming president, the first black woman on the Supreme Court, but at the same time, the gap, economic gap, is very wide. So that's the struggle. How do you bring up everyone, which would also mean bringing up everyone who's not black, and recognize the main enemy is not whites, for example, but the system itself.
You sort of anticipated my appreciation for the movement. Maybe we'll do more around in conclusion to this interview. Let's sort of double back to the position of the constant effort of black people and other people of color and some whites to struggle against racism, particularly racism that injures all black people, those on top of the lower, mostly spared it. It seems to me that one striking feature of American life now today is racism is sometimes obvious, like with the police frequently, but most of the time, and perhaps the most injurious, is the concealed racism where the perpetrators may think of themselves as enlightened and thoughtful, having black friends and having the highest esteem for Oprah Winfrey and Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods and on and on, great heroes. Study after study shows how ubiquitous racism is in many, many decisions by people who would be shocked and disbelieved that, in fact, the decision was made on racial lines.
That's a good point, and I'll explain it a little bit from my vantage point, because I think it gets to the heart of where the racism in the system itself and how it functions. Because the truth of the matter, a lot of people call it institutional racism. It's built into the system, and the unbiased racism, which you're describing, that people have, including liberals. And what that confirms is what the movement in the 60s understood. You can't just talk about it. You have to have laws that enforce it. Force rights, like affirmative action, which doesn't exist anymore in this country. Affirmative action, which was created in the late 60s, basically said you had to have quotas and goals, strict quotas and goals to make up for the 200 years of institutional racism. You couldn't just say, oh, we don't like this, and eventually it should change. You had to say, if you worked like I was in the airline industry, you had to have black pilots, black mechanics, and you had a certain time frame to get it done. If you just kept it at the way it was always, they would always say, well, there's no qualified people to take these jobs. But then once you said, no, to keep getting government contracts, you have to show us you can get 5% of blacks in these positions, not just janitors, or you lose the contract, it happened. It would happen. Okay, those kind of programs have been gutted. In universities like California, we don't even have any form of race can be used in admissions. So what's happened since they made that change 20 years ago, there's much fewer blacks and Latinos in the university systems. So that proves that when you use race and you set goals, you got more people in the institution. So that's what we're facing now. The backlash against black rights and equality has led to the top blacks have no problem. So they're affected too, but not the same way. People accept them. But you cannot miss why discrimination still happens in housing, not the same way as in the 50s. It still exists in jobs, in opportunities for what I call the working class layers, and they can't make it because the fight by the institution, some people call it white supremacy or whatever, the state has made it harder and more difficult for that change. And because liberal whites will go along, they'll say, I don't like it, but they go along with it. The change hasn't happened. So when the voting rights law was gutted by the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice Roberts, and they opened the door to getting rid of the 1965 laws, suddenly every state in the South and other states changed their laws to make it more difficult to vote. That's what happens when you don't have firm laws and rights protected. The rights are not about whether you like somebody. Rights are about making sure they're enforced. Once they're enforced, it can change people's mind. But if you don't do that, those on the far right can push back, and then the white liberals and others, including black liberals, will say, okay, we have to keep pushing in other means to get more protections. But it won't work. In the long run, you have to radically change the way the institutions exist, the laws exist, and if you don't, you will always face the backlash.
Yeah, let me give one example, Molly. That was striking to me, but there are many, many, many of them. In every institution, blacks seem to, despite the surprise by the people who are working there, blacks seem to get inferior treatment of one kind or another. And that's true of medicine. It's true of child welfare decisions. It's particularly true of employment. As you pointed out, the people on top and the highly educated and the people with good manners and good teeth and the rest of it, good clothing, and the sort of effective, charming selves.
Yes.
But when there's a call for on all kinds of lesser positions by companies or even small places for people to send their resumes that will be then evaluated, and if a person looks promising, given an interview, well, those resumes come in. The researchers do the same exact resume without pictures for people identifiably white, with a white name, and people identifying that have a black-sounding name. But they're identical resumes, and yet the white people with a white name get called back for an in-person interview, that is, they might be considered for employment, much more often. And that's so telling. Blackness just has its, especially if you aren't in a top position, it becomes a huge burden and difficulty for the majority of the black population.
And that's true, but the point I would emphasize is that we made gains against that in the 70s and 80s, especially in the 1970s, when we had different forms of positive action or affirmative action. Employers and offices that wouldn't hire blacks, under the pressure of the movement, they did. Today, that pressure is being taken off, so it's even less for anyone. That was the point about affirmative action I was trying to make. So when you had laws to say you had to take some steps, then you made some progress. Never what it should be. Never met the percentage of black African Americans who were in the population of a city. It definitely never was true in the South, ever. But, you know, you made gains. Today, when you have the pushback, there's reversals. Like I said, I gave my example of California. So when you have the, and California is considered one of the most liberal states. So think of other states, the reversals. So if you don't have the laws, you don't make the things that are less pressure on the institutions, which are still run by whites. I'll give you another example that everyone can understand. Professional sports. The NFL, the football league, is like 70% black, but the management is almost all white. They won't even put many blacks as head coaches because who hires them? The owners, who are white. So even where you have a situation where people may be paid decently, make a lot of money if they're stars, who makes decisions on the ownership of the teams that are not the players? You know, so it's across the board. It's across the board, this problem. But if you're a working class black and you have no legal protections, it's very hard. It's very hard to make progress. And that's part of the reversals. I mean, people don't want to hear it, but I'll say it anyway. After the end of Reconstruction, and during Reconstruction at the end of the Civil War, There were elected black officials in many southern states. There were more blacks in different skilled jobs. As soon as the white backlash and supremacists took power by violence in the south and up north, those positions were eliminated. And by the turn of the century, meaning the 1900s, those jobs were gone. Lynchings became strong again, and black people were put back in a box. You know, not slavery, but in a very bad situation. It took another 65, 70 years to reverse that. And now we're in a new cycle where the same thing is happening. Now, people say it's not impossible, it won't happen. Well, it won't happen that we go back to Jim Crow because it's not useful. But you can make it very difficult to make gains if you're a poor working class person in this country anywhere. That can happen even if you have a black elite. And then the black elite will have less opportunities too, because they need pressure from below.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mall Variety Hour, talking to Malik Mia, a longtime black civil rights and revolutionary socialist activist, made his living as an aviation mechanic, co-wrote and edited 3 books. He's now publishing articles in left journals and webzines, including Against the Current, Links International Journal of Socialist Renewal, and the Green Left Weekly. We're going to have to, because of time, omit discussing the particularly injurious consequences for blacks of the way the criminal justice system is organized and makes decisions. It's truly a criminal justice system, and particularly for young blacks who are put in juvie by the police, especially in the big cities, for most any infraction, particularly if it's accompanied by challenging the police crimes, in quotes, for which white kids in the suburbs are taken right to their parents. Cops would be fired in the suburbs if they took teens into the criminal justice system for as little as marijuana use or many, many offenses that are dangerous. Vandalism, speeding in cars, drinking in cars, they go right to the homes and drop them off. Very few white kids in the suburbs get handled.
And they don't have to fear about being shot for just being on the street.
They really don't. You know, the police are very, very, very understanding of white men who are carrying guns, but they shoot black guys who come reach into their pocket maybe to take out their driver's license. Yeah. Yes, the ubiquitous racism in the police
force.
Well,
and that's the institution of policing. Policing, because policing, it doesn't matter if you're white, black, Latino, Asian, you're in the system. So all of them treat black people the same way because they're told to. Now, when they're not on the police force, that may not be the case. But you see, black cops are just as brutal toward other black young men as the white cops. They'll shoot them too. And that's just the reality, because the institution of blue means that's priority.
Yeah.
So it's important to understand the Black Lives Movement, when it existed around George Floyd, its power was not that blacks were doing it. That's always been true. But it won the hearts and minds of whites, Asians, Latinos, and around the world. That was why it was so strong. Now we're back to with the Democrats as the president. The only people who protest primarily is from the black community. You get allies, but not like we saw in 2020.
There's a lot more to talk about, Malik, but I'm afraid we have... Yeah. We're running out of time. I think it should be pointed out that both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, mostly, not all of them, see the black poor as having missed the opportunity to make it in this opportunity society, as if everybody can. In fact, if you work hard enough, you can become a professional, become an electrician. I'm not sure how you made it as a mechanic. It must have been a big struggle for you on aviation.
Well, fortunately, there were other, as I said, because of the 70s, I became a mechanic in the 80s. But because of what went before, it was easier for someone like me to get the job, whereas it wouldn't have been 20 years before that or 10 years before that. So the movement opened the door for people who they wouldn't have hired to be hired. Without the movement, you get no change. That's the fundamental point, I would say. Without mass movement, you will get no change.
Okay, let me reiterate something you said at the beginning of the interview, an appreciation for King and the civil rights struggle. And you pointed out it triggered a democratic revolution my sense is that the 60s should be seen as a great insurrection across this country and against its former, its authority patterns, challenging the oppression of all the subordinates, youth, women, other people of color, unusual-looking people, sexual gender minorities, those getting disabled before they got old. Indeed, blacks took most of the punishment. Still, it seems to me, as you pointed out, blacks also won a lot, winning, in fact, and in effect, the capacity to challenge and fight back and develop and tell their own story. Malik, you get the last word.
Yes. Well, I just want to emphasize, again, the power of the civil rights movement and revolution in the 60s, which really began in the 40s, that the power of that movement was it knew African-Americans had very few rights in this country. So they knew you had to go to the street. Civil disobedience was one of its hallmarks. But there was an understanding that only disrupting the system would lead to legal changes. And that's what happened. And when King, after the laws were passed, King didn't stop. He started talking about the Vietnam War at the time. He talked about other issues. He talked about why whatever happened to African-Americans happens to all workers, poor whites as well. So that there was an understanding that was greater then than we see today in a lot of ways. But that history is still there. It can be understood. And many, many more activists need to recapture those lessons and continue to fight today.
Malik Mia, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.